Good Monday. Today is September the 9th, and you're listening to My Farm. We're going to take some time this morning and visit with Brandon Kern. He's the Director of Public Affairs and Issue Analysis with the Ohio Soybean Council, visiting about the EPA and the Endangered Species Act. Some guidelines are coming out both for herbicide and insecticide use. We'll get the details with Brandon coming up after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
Joining me is Brandon Kern with the Ohio Soybean Association. Brandon, a beautiful day for golf. We are at the 2024 Harvest Classic golf outing, but we want to talk about things maybe beyond the golf course. We want to talk about some policy things going on. One of the big things we've been tracking with you has been the EPA and some policies with the Endangered Species Act. Where do we stand with that currently?
Yeah, well, first of all, it is a beautiful day out here. It's going to be nice to maybe forget about the policy for just a day before we dive back into it. A lot of important developments with that Endangered Species Act and the approach that the US EPA is taking towards new regulatory measures on pesticides in general. And, you know, first and foremost, we've been working the first item that they rolled out with that Endangered Species Act in mind was what they're calling their herbicide strategy. And that is the approach in which they are going to require certain mitigation measures to be put in place to minimize potential impact of herbicide applications on endangered species that are, you know, proximate area to where farming operations are going on. We've been working on this for over a year now, and you know, have been in close dialogue with EPA, trying to give constructive feedback, trying to make this a more workable proposal. The final strategy has been released, and you know, I think we've made a lot of headway in making this more workable. I think there's some remaining concerns just in general. You know, one of the arguments we've made from the beginning is that the need for mitigation strategies at all are based on overly conservative estimates of the negative impact that herbicides have on endangered species. And so that still remains a problem for us and something we're going to have to work through and figure out from a strategy standpoint. But in terms of, you know, those mitigation measures that farmers are going to have to put in place, the array of options has been increased, and the number of mitigation points, I think, for a lot of farmers, comparatively to the original proposal, is going to be significantly less. We talked about, we made headways where they've carved up the different parts of the country into high risk, low risk type areas. Most of Ohio is a medium or low risk categorization, which means the mitigation measures are going to be needed are going to be fewer here for those farmers. But, you know, we still have some remaining concerns about the overall strategy, but I think we've made a lot of progress. I mean, I think just one example, when the EPA originally rolled this proposal out, they didn't give any credit to if you were using adjuvants in your herbicide application. They have now added that as a mitigation measure. So you can use an adjuvant. We all know that decreases the chances of that of the pesticide getting off of the field, stays on the plant. It seems like a pretty common sense thing. They have adopted that based on feedback that the agriculture groups have been able to provide. So, you know, some positive, you know, while we still have some remaining concerns, we've made positive improvements in that proposal.
Good to hear there's some listening going on. So that's the herbicide strategy. You said earlier the insecticide strategy also released. That looks similar, or what do we know about that?
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very similar approach. I mean, they almost look identical to each other. Same type of approach, mitigation measures, same kind of high risk, low risk categorization of different regions around the country. And so I think it's going to be a very, very similar, if it's not a mirror of, you know, identical to the herbicide strategy, very, very close from what we've been able to tell so far. That was just released within the last, you know, week and a half or so. So we're still combing through the fine details. But, you know, as we've looked at it, our original analysis of it is that it's very similar approach.
My guest again today is Brandon Kern, Director of Public Affairs and Issue Analysis for the Ohio Soybean Council and Soybean Association. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions, talk a little bit about electricity and rural electrification. The Powering Affordable Clean Energy Program is one of USDA's rural development offerings designed to improve rural electric and rural energy production and availability. USDA's Rod Bain has some more details.
An announcement to keep pace going in rural America.
This is an announcement of $140 million with five different agreements, one in Nevada and four in Kentucky.
Agriculture Deputy Secretary Xochitl Torres-Small with the recent announcement in Nevada associated with the Powering Affordable Clean Energy Program. Pace.
There's two solar power facilities. The facility in Nevada also has storage to help with that reliability piece. And then there's also some hydroelectric investments as well in Kentucky.
As part of these projects under this rural development program,
the next phase will be working on a community benefit plan, making sure that these investments really result in investments in the community, looking at land use, looking at labor, looking at jobs created, and working to make sure that it's having a real impact in the rural places we're investing in.
To date, $600 million of $1 billion in Inflation Reduction Act funding has been invested in PACE projects. And the deputy secretary notes the connection between PACE and other rural development electrification programs.
This is part of a broader effort specifically to drive down energy costs. So another related program is the Rural Energy for America program. And that's available to rural small businesses as well as farms across the country. If they want to invest in renewable or energy efficient projects, they can receive funding through rural development to drive down those energy costs as well. And then investing in rural electric cooperatives specifically and helping them update their infrastructure and provide affordable clean energy.
Deputy Secretary Torres-Small's PACE announcement in Nevada occurred in the community of Pahrump, west of Las Vegas, which is part of another USDA-led effort, the Rural Partners Network. Pahrump is one of 36 community networks in 10 states and Puerto Rico, networks that are part of a federal collaboration headed by the Agriculture Department to help underserved communities receive access to federal funding.
Through that, the Valley Electric, which is the cooperative that received this PACE grant, was able to also work with rural development to get some technical assistance for the Rural Energy for America program for small businesses and farms to drive down their energy costs and help those farms and small businesses apply for those grants.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.